Hello and welcome to What the Faux Travel Podcast with Nick and Amy. This is Series 3, Episode 11, and this one is all about Jordan.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the show. We're going to be talking about our little Middle Eastern adventure in Jordan. And it's going to be a bit more of an upbeat episode compared to the last one, which was about Egypt. But the thing that's not upbeat is this is our penultimate episode of the series.
Oh my goodness. This series has gone really quickly, hasn't it?
It really has. But, I mean, you guys know we're travelling right now, so we've got loads more stuff coming. So, of course, there will be Series 4.
Spoiler there. So we are currently in northeast Brazil, just for a little update, and just to update you that we are safe, just in case you were wondering, because we're in a place called Fortaleza, and there's a bit of a political uprising that's going on at the moment, actually. The day before we arrived, there were some terror attacks in the area of Fortaleza. So Fortaleza is the capital of the state of Ceará. And yeah, there's some things that have been going on. So a new president has been inaugurated in the last few days, and he's called Bolsonaro. And the area's just been made a lot safer because they have deployed 300 troops in this area just to kind of tackle the criminal violence that's going on. And this is all because the prison authorities in the state have blocked mobile phone signals inside the jails. And so obviously the prisoners are not happy. And they've also ended a policy of separating inmates by their gang affiliation. So, which I don't know, I'm not sure if that's a smart move, to be honest, because, you know, if they're with their gangs inside the prisons, that's going to be safer, surely.
Yeah, or does it just encourage the gangs to stick together? And does it contribute more to gang crime and violence? I don't know, but basically this new president is really cracking down on gangs and criminals and violence. And in the short term, there's going to be a bit of a backlash. So yeah, there's a few things going on in Brazil at the moment, but I'm sure it will all settle down. And like you said, Amy, we are safe. We're fine.
Yeah, and just to give you a little bit more background, so Bolsonaro, as most presidents really, it's almost 50-50 of whether people like him or not. You know, some people voted for him because it was a slightly better option than the other person, because their voting here is a bit different. So they have two sections of voting. So the first one, you can vote for anyone who is up for election. But then the second round of voting, there's only two that go through to the next round. So, yeah, that's the way they vote here. But Bolsonaro is known for saying a few racist comments, apparently. And he's quite misogynistic. So, you know, pros and cons.
Yeah, well, some people love him, some people hate him. And I'm sure, you know, the comparison's been thrown around with him and Trump. But still, with Trump, there's people that hate him. But he's got a lot of fans. But that's what happens with these politicians. They are divisive.
Yeah, so that's our mini update. That's where we are and how things are going. But yeah, we're safe. So don't worry about that. The podcast will still be coming. Okay, so in this Jordan episode, we are going to be talking about Amman, the capital city, the Dead Sea, Petra, Wadi Rum, the desert, Wadi Musa. We're going to be talking about the food, Mansaf, and the culture of Wazda, which we'll explain to you later. And finally, of course, we're going to have a game. And today our game is Amman, I feel like a woman.
All right, shout outs, here we go. We heard from Chloe and Scott, also known as We Keep Moving on Instagram. They said that we are keeping them going on long bus journeys in South America. We're also in South America, so we might see you guys soon. Let us know if you want to be friends. And I need to correct someone's name. On the last episode where I gave shout outs, we had a message from, I don't really know if it was, well, a person called Gercha. But Gercha is not his real name. His real name is George Haley, and he is a fan of the show. George, we're very sorry we got your name wrong, but I'm pretty sure when I went on your Instagram profile, it said your name was Gercha. But it's not. It's George Haley. You are a legend, sir. Also, the next shout out goes to Julio, who we actually met in Sao Paulo. It's a friend of my football friend, Rafael.
Oh, yeah.
He said, next time you record, give me a shout out. So he's going to listen. So Julio from Sao Paulo, and he's a big Sao Paulo FC football fan. And finally, we heard from Brian Scott on Instagram. He said he's been listening to us for a year now and loves every minute. And he said, good luck with your continued journey. Thank you so much. That's really nice.
That's lovely.
And that is it for shout outs. And there's no hate mail. We're on a roll.
Yes. Well, time for game show facts then.
Let's go from one great feature from one great feature to the next.
Just take the stage, Nick. I'll just sit here and listen, shall I? Be the good woman that I am.
Yalla habibi. Officially the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. It's a small country with few natural resources, but it has played an important role in the struggle for power in the Middle East. Jordan's significance results partly from its strategic location at the crossroads of what Christians, Jews, and Muslims call the Holy Land. Unlike the other Arab states in the Middle East, Jordan has no oil of its own. Jordan is bordered by Saudi Arabia to the south, Iraq to the northeast, Syria to the north, Israel and Palestine to the west. The Desert Kingdom was created when France and Britain divided up the Middle East after World War I. The population is around 6 million and the capital city is Amman. Around a third of the population are refugees. Most notably, Jordan has accepted many Palestinian and Syrian refugees. The major religion is Islam, and the main language is Arabic. Jordan and Israel have been in conflict over the West Bank territory in the middle of the two countries, but in 1994, Jordan signs a peace treaty with Israel, ending 46 years of war. Egypt are the only other Arab country to declare peace with Israel. Jordan's most famous tourist attraction is the ancient city of Petra, which attracts tourists from all over the world. This is where Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade was filmed. The country also offers tourists Mars-like landscapes in the Wadi Rum Desert and the opportunity to float in the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is not actually a sea, it's a lake, and the high salt content makes floating easy and means that life can't be supported apart from bacteria and fungi. It's 9 times saltier than the sea. And finally, the Dead Sea is also at the lowest point on dry land, 430 meters below sea level.
Nice one, Nick. But I have some criticism for you.
Go on.
There was nothing about Bedouin culture in those facts.
Coming up on the show. Yep, I didn't think about that. But
Do you not think they should be in there?
It is coming up on the show. We talk a lot about it. We have a good chat, actually, with a Bedouin man himself.
Okay, well, I feel like it should have been in the facts. So next time you write these out, you need to be a bit more extensive with your research, okay?
Okay, let's just make it up now. Some of the indigenous people in Jordan are Bedouins. Desert nomads, a.k.a. How was that?
Yeah, okay. Let's move on. Right, an overview of our trip. So we flew into Amman, which is the capital of Jordan. We then took a car with a group of people, which we'll explain in a bit. But we went all the way down to the Dead Sea, which I think is about an hour's drive, hour and a half from Amman. It's a very small country. You can definitely drive around. It's a very drivable country.
Yep.
We then went to Petra, which the place of Petra is called Wadi Musa. We then drove to the desert of Wadi Rum, and then actually from there we went into Israel, but we travelled up Israel and back into Jordan at the top, so we went back to Amman. So we kind of took a full circle. And actually, so some of you may know that we are making videos of our trips, not only podcasts now, and this was definitely my favourite video to edit. Because
it was really good to watch. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, like it was just so nice and just brought back so many nice memories because we really loved Jordan. We met some fantastic people there. I know we say that a lot, but we really, really did. And we had such a good time. So yeah, it was so nice to edit that. And if you do want to see that video, you can check it out on our Patreon. I know we tell you about that a lot. I'm not sure if we fully explain what it is, but from as little as like $1 a month, the website's American, so everything's in dollars. But from $1 a month, that you can get loads of rewards from us. So you can get extra content like these videos. But then we also do little things like we'll send you a postcard once a month from where we are. You know, lots of little things like that. So it's definitely worth checking out, guys.
Yeah, by being a patron, you get something back. We're not just taking your money.
But we're kind of doing that. No, I'm joking.
So our Jordan trip didn't start off on the best foot, did it? Because we had to get from the airport to our Airbnb. And we normally do that by Uber. Didn't work out, did it?
No. So we didn't actually know this until we'd got in the Uber, but Uber's actually illegal. Well, it is and it isn't. There's a few weird policies and laws with it, but effectively we shouldn't be using it. But we didn't know that because the app was working, so we assumed we could use it.
I'd actually say just avoid Uber taxis as long as they put the meter on. Taxis are actually pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Okay, so our Jordan trip, it started in Amman, but this time round in the city, we didn't actually see any of it. We were there for a couple of days to relax after our traumatic time in Egypt.
and we were doing some work.
Well, yeah, we did some podcast work. And then through the Couchsurfing app, we managed to speak to a few other travellers who had arranged a private car to take us to the Dead Sea and then to Petra. So that was really lucky we got to meet up with them guys and split the cost because, as we'd explained through this episode, Jordan's not very good for public transport. We believe there is a bus from Amman to Petra, but you can't book it and you have to get up really early and you can't guarantee a seat. So private cars are the best way. So if you can speak to other travellers and join in and chip in for private cars, that's the best way to do it. So,
and they're actually very affordable, aren't they? So it was effectively a day trip what we did, going all the way down to Petra or Wadi Musa, the place where Petra is. But I think we paid 20 Jordanian dinar each for a whole day's tour and getting to seeing the Dead Sea and then getting down to where we needed to be.
Yeah,
I think it's a really good price.
Full day driving, 20 Jordanian dinar is about £20. So maybe around like 25 or 30 US dollars each for a full day, Dead Sea and to get to Petra. Brilliant. So that worked out really well. So we'll talk about Amman later.
And then we arrived at the Dead Sea. Now, as Nick said in his game show facts, it's not actually a sea. It's a lake, isn't it?
We've been lied to.
We have. So the Dead Sea actually goes in between Israel and Jordan. So you can see it from both sides. Online, before we went, I looked at a lot of reviews like asking which side's better. And it's pretty 50-50, to be honest. But from the photos, I'd actually say the Israeli side looks more beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's actually where more people do go to go in the Dead Sea. I think the resorts there are bigger.
Yeah, so we can't actually clarify that because we didn't go on the Israeli side. But from the Jordan side, it was absolutely awesome, wasn't it? Like, it was one of those, well, it was on my bucket list. It was definitely one of those bucket list things that you need to tick off. You see so many people in videos floating and they look really shocked. You're like, oh my God, like, yeah, that looks really cool. But when you actually do it, it really shocks you, doesn't it?
Yeah, the feeling is amazing. I can't really describe it. You try to kind of swim like you normally would swim in the sea, but you can't because you're just floating and bobbing on the top. And when you like lie on your back, yeah, you can relax and read a newspaper or whatever. But your feet, you try to keep your feet beneath you, but you can't. They just keep popping up to the surface. It's a very strange feeling. Everyone has to try it, basically.
So if you're actually not too sure what the Dead Sea is, it's a lake that is just incredibly salty. I think it's been said that it's about 33.7% of salt in the Dead Sea, and that makes it one of the world's saltiest bodies of water. And so that's what makes you float when you go into it. And like Nick said, when you go in, it's really weird how it bobs you straight back up. And if you try and swim on your front, kind of like breaststroke or front crawl, it's really strange because it's really pushing up your lower back. So I found it really hard to swim like that.
You swim like with your bum in the air.
Yeah, it's really strange.
It's really funny. But yeah, it's an incredible feeling. And that really was one of the highlights of this whole big trip that we're doing.
Yeah, and so if you're wondering, you know, is this a free thing? Can I just go myself because it's a beach? That's kind of how we assumed. But from doing research, you can go to the Amman public beach, which is 20 Jordanian dinar. So that's around 20 Great British pounds. Or you can get a day pass onto there. And we've heard that that place has showers and changing rooms and things like that. Or you can be a real budgeteer like we did. And how did we do it, Nick?
Well, our driver, Mo, who you'll hear from in a bit, really nice guy. We had a really good time with him. He just stopped at the side of the road on like this cliff. And we're thinking, what are we doing? And he said, right, this is where we're getting into the sea. So we just climbed down this cliff.
In flip-flops.
Yeah, in flip-flops. But we got in for free. But a top tip, if you are going to do that, bring a big bottle, almost like a big tank of water, you know, what you get in like water coolers and stuff like that. Bring that with you because you'll need to shower yourself off afterwards. You'll have to get the salt off, which is what we did. Like Mo knew, he's done it before. He knew we'd have to bring a load of water. And it was just a fantastic thing that we did for free. So it was brilliant.
Yeah, and also another top tip, if you are doing that, is make sure you get some of the mud. You need to smother it over yourself, let it dry in the sun, and then go back into the water and wash it off, because some people say it has healing qualities. I mean, you can believe that or not. I mean, I think they say a lot of skin diseases, it helps, psoriasis and things like that. So I don't know if that actually works, but I do know it did make me look 10 years younger.
And I also know that it absolutely stank.
Yeah, it did actually. And the water really stings, doesn't it, Nick?
Oh, if you get that water, obviously because it's so salty, if you get that water in your eye, it is horrible. So then I had to get the bottle of water to wash it out. So yeah, try not to get your face or your hair wet, because if you get your hair wet, it will drip into your eyes. And that's what happened with me. But yeah, not great. But apart from that, really, really good day. I loved it. So much fun.
Yeah, real bucket list stuff.
All right, so continuing on our road trip towards Petra, we had a good chat with our driver, Mo, and we just wanted to ask him a few questions about the culture and the religion in Jordan.
Let's say 92% are Muslims, 6% are Christians, both Orthodox and Catholic. Protestant are really minimal minority of Christians. And the rest, the 2%, most of them, they are Druze. Druze, it's a different religion than Islam, but it's close to it.
And do you think, I know you said majority are Muslim, but do you think all the religions like live together quite peacefully in Jordan?
Yes, because this is the choice of the government. The government is fighting against the extremist people from, let's say, from the Muslim part. And at the end, as a result, they are living in peace together. But I don't know, is that because of the people themselves or the government is pushing them to live together peacefully? Yeah.
And what is life like for a woman here? Like, can women drive? Can they vote? I don't know. How strict is it?
Okay. By the government laws, women are equal to men. That's the government and the constitution of Jordan. Both women and men are same and are equal. But because of the traditions and because of the religion, especially Islam, the people are not applying this so much. I mean, the women are more suppressed than the men, or they are suppressed by the men in the family, in their families. And it's like the women, if they are lucky and they were born for a relatively open-minded family, then they can have a job, they study, they drive. But let's say minimum, majority, 99%, they go to school. Yes, there are some people, they not allowing the woman to go to the universities, but those are like a minority. A majority, they allow their women to work and to go to the university. Probably they control her dress code, yes. But I mean, in Jordan, the women's situation comparing to the other Islamic countries is not that extreme. I think it's not that extreme comparing to Pakistan, to Afghanistan, to even to Egypt. And it really depends on the social level you live, or you are Christian or Muslim, because Christian women, they are more like lucky in Jordan, because they can wear whatever they want, and they still, like, even Christian women, they cannot have boyfriends and then they bring them to their parents, and that's not accepted in the Middle East culture. What the government says and what the people really think is really different. You can see the Soviet Union culture was like religion-free country, right? They were not promoting for the religion in the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union collapsed in 1990. And now you can go and you can see the Soviet countries, including Russia, the majority are religious and they go to the churches. Although the mentality of the Soviet Union was non-religious. So, either if you have rules in the government, you cannot change the people if they don't want to change. And religion is not something easy to change. It's so difficult.
And then, just finally for me, for a tourist woman, how should she dress? Does she have to always cover her shoulders and knees? Or?
Okay, she needs to be smart. Sometimes you can wear like in Europe and Jordan, with a bikini or a short dress or whatever. Depends on the situation. There is no rule for it. Like, you can be modest in your clothes and then you go to a party with open-minded locals and then they're gonna make fun of you that because you are like afraid of wearing something different. At the same time, you can wear short dresses and stuff, and then you go to a local village, and then the people, they're gonna harass you. But let's say minimum in Jordan, I don't think that physical harassment is common. Maybe the people, they look, they stare, they catcall, but it's not common to touch women. Even if the dress was extreme for the locals, I don't think that they touch it. That's what I think, and she needs to be smart. Being modest is more secure and safe, but that's not easy. For example, if she wants to swim, she wants to be free in a party, to wear whatever, that's different. I think she needs to be smart and to read the situation and to behave according to the situation. There is no single rule for everything. That does not exist, and that includes other countries, not only Jordan.
There we go, that was our tour guide Mo. I would say I agree with him there, where it's in terms of tourist females and how you dress, you need to judge it by the situation. I definitely felt it was more open-minded than Egypt.
Yep.
I felt more comfortable, even though, like, yeah, sometimes, it, like, if I wore shorts, I definitely got a lot of stares and things like that. But I would never wear clothes where my shoulders and my knees were out at the same time, because it was such a hot country, you know, you can't always be wearing trousers and long sleeve t-shirts, like, it's just too hard. So yeah, I always tried to be as respectful as I possibly could while keeping to my identity and also staying as comfortable as possible.
Absolutely. And it's easy for men, because the truth is we could pretty much wear what we want. All right, it's not a place you'd walk around with your top off, a bit like in England, as soon as there's a little bit of sun, you see people walk around with their tops off. But yeah, you wouldn't do that. But shorts, t-shirt, it is easy for men. So that's why we wanted to get Mo's thoughts on being a woman there. I think that was some really useful information.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mo. So after one of our best days for a long time, after Egypt, we arrived in Wadi Musa. Now, this is the home of Petra. And we met up with our couchsurfing hosts while we were there, Injad and Arkan. They are two brothers. They are Bedouins and, yeah, local guys who run some apartments there. And they're called VP Apartments, Value Place Apartments. But alongside that, they have a traditional Bedouin tent out the front, where it's kind of like a lounge where they hang out. A bit, if you don't know about Jordanian culture, then you might be akin to Moroccan culture. So there's a lot of rugs everywhere, shisha pipes. Yeah, it looks really cool. So they had that outside, and that's where we stayed.
Yeah, he lets couch surfers just like sleep in the tent, which is pretty cool. So we met up with those guys. We're going to explain more about the stuff we got up to with them. But as we are in Wadi Musa, the home of Petra, let's talk about Petra. So if you guys don't actually know what Petra is, I'm sure you've all seen the pictures. You probably do know what it is, but in case you don't, then it's a historical and archaeological city in southern Jordan. It has amazing buildings carved into the cliffs, and it was the set for the film Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. That's what I said in my game show facts. So yeah, like I said, you've probably all seen the pictures. Luckily, Injad, one of the brothers we were staying with, he is actually an archaeologist, and he can explain more about Petra.
Well, simply, Petra is the capital of the Nabatean Kingdom. The Nabatean Kingdom is like a big, not that huge like America states, but it's like a big at that time. And Petra, we in Petra Archaeological Park, we talk about 264 kilometers square, and we as archaeologists discover only 20% of it. So it's like really big. The one that everybody knows as Petra, it's just only like a tomb. And the people of Nabateans, they believe that there is another life. So the another life for them, they actually put like a pottery full of food with the people who die to they eat in their second life. So they have several gods. The main god of them is called Doshara. And they are like really good in a lot of things like trade and also water engineering and other things like pottery.
Okay,
So the Nabatean people, they had an empire, didn't they? And when was this in time? BC, like, when was it?
Well, Nabatean, the first mission for them in the box, it was in 312 before Christ. And they end by Roman hands as a government in 106 after death of Crassus.
And they had their empire. And like you said, it came to an end once the Romans arrived. The Nabatean Empire, how far around the Middle East did it stretch? Are we talking like Syria? Like how far was it?
Well, you can say that west of Nabatean Kingdom, it was like in Palestine and Jordan. And the north of it was in south of Syria. And east of it was like Saudi Arabia or south of Saudi Arabia. And east of it was Dubai, you can say that, yeah.
What would you like to say to people, tourists that are coming to Petra? And of course, you host people on Couchsurfing as well.
Yeah.
So what would you like to say to anyone that's thinking about coming to Petra? Why should they come? And what can you offer guests on Couchsurfing?
Well, in fact, Petra is big, and it wants like several days to just to see the main trail in it. You will go to hike more than 17 kilometers at least to see most of it. And you got to spend more than 3 days to be honest, to see Petra. And Petra, it's in fact, as some people say, that it discovered 200 years ago. And it came one of the UNESCO site in 1985. 2007, it's become one of the wonders of the world. So it's amazing thing to see. We have like a different landscape. And it's like really important to see it because it's completely different about the others that you saw. And you will go to mixed with the culture via me while I host you if you like to. It will be a pleasure to host you in my apartments and in my tent.
Thanks for that, Injad. 20%. They've only found 20% of Petra. That's insane. It's massive.
That is amazing. And it is massive. And that was good advice from him saying that you need 2 or 3 days. So we actually had 2 days there. So let's talk about what we thought, because this was another proper big highlight of the trip.
It was, and another bucket list item ticked off. So I got to tick 2 off in the space of, I think, 2 days, which is amazing. Yeah, it's absolutely mind-blowing. So when you arrive, you've got a good 2 to 3 kilometer walk through kind of cave landscape, which is a bit like that film, if you've seen it, 127 Hours. I think it was one of the Franco brothers, wasn't it?
Yeah, James Franco.
Yeah. So he was, and it's a true story, he was walking through canyons, I believe in America, and he fell and his arm got stuck and he ended up, spoiler, he ended up cutting off his arm.
Yeah, everyone knows the story. There's a book of it, Between a Rock and a Hard Place is what the book's called. But it does look like that landscape. Even the walk to Petra was quite amazing.
Yeah, so there's like 2 to 3 kilometres of walk before you see the treasury. Now, that's the place that you see in everybody's picture that looks really cool. It's the main reason why people go.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the treasury. But just a little tip on the way there, you'll see a lot of people who...
Jack Sparrows.
You'll see a lot of Jack Sparrows, that's correct. Now, these Jack Sparrows are pretending to be indigenous people, and you'll be able to spot them. And we're calling them Jack Sparrow because they've got the black eyeliner on and they look a bit piratey.
Yeah, they do.
And they all have horses. But on that first 2 to 3 kilometer walk especially, they are going to try every trick under the sun to get you to give them money. So they'll tell you that you can get a horse ride or a camel ride for free. It's included in your ticket. It's not included in your ticket.
Yeah.
Luckily, we didn't fall for this because Injad, our host, told us about it. But yeah, it's not included in your ticket. And at the end of the ride, they will then force you to give them money. So make sure you stay clear of those guys. They'll also do some tricks inside as well, where if you pay them some money, they'll take you the quick route round and get you the best pictures and things like that. And I'm sure you'll get a good picture out of it. I mean, it's your decision if you want to do it. We didn't do it, so we don't know if the trick ever gets dangerous or anything like that. But just a heads up, there's some trickery going on.
Yeah, and you can easily get a map of Petra, so just get a map and just do it yourself. Like, okay, if you want to pay for a guide, fine, but it's easy to do by yourself.
Yeah, and that's what you've paid for. You've paid for your entry to walk around. It's a place, if you like hiking, then I would recommend you do 3 days plus. I mean, we don't hate hiking, we don't absolutely love it. We enjoy a good walk, so we did 2 days and we thought that was perfect.
Yeah, that was enough for us. So the first day was a big one. Like you said, we saw the treasury, which is the main money shot.
We then did, and it is a long walk. Like, yeah, you have to be up for a hike. Although there are donkeys and horses available, but they don't look like they're treated very well. So I'm not keen on, you know, people paying for donkeys, but I guess you can do what you want. But we walked all the way to the end of the main trail, which takes you to the monastery. Is that right?
Yeah.
Which, that's not the famous one, but that's actually bigger.
Yeah, it's really strange. I don't know why it's not more famous, actually, because it's absolutely massive. It's 50 metres wide and 45 metres tall. So, yeah, very big.
Yeah, very impressive. And there's not many tourists there, because the first one is really hard to get a good picture because there are so many people. But they're the monastery, not many people there.
It's because people don't want to walk the main trail.
Well, yeah, that's very true, I admit. And it is a bit of a hike, especially in the desert sun, you know, but just come prepared with plenty of water and you'll be fine. I enjoyed it. So that was our first day at Petra. We saw the two main sites and did a lot of walking. And then the next day we came back because we wanted to get the shot of the treasury from above. And we've seen this on social media, we've seen it online. It's a really famous picture and it does look pretty good, doesn't it?
It really does. And like we said, with these indigenous group or tribes that are there, they tell you that from when you're standing at the treasury, they can take you up about like a 10-minute walk if you pay them some money, and then you can get that picture. I'm not sure if that's true. Like we said, we didn't go with that. We actually walked the way that the map told us, and I'd say it was probably an hour and 15 walk.
I think so, something like that, yeah.
But it was so much better than the main trail. The main trail is obviously really busy. You know, these truckloads of tours come through, ploughing people into the site. And it is really big. So, you know, it's not that crowded where you're shoulder to shoulder or anything like that. But the main trail is very busy. And the second day when we went up to the treasury, it was such a beautiful day. I'd say we probably saw about 25 tourists in total on our hour and 15 walk.
Yeah.
And it was
many.
Just so nice. And it was much better quality than the main trail as well, like all the steps on the way up, and there was loads of animals running around, and it was really cute. It was a really, really lovely walk.
Yeah, and you see some amazing views of like everywhere we walked on the first day because we're up really high, and yet we got the money shot from above, and that was really good. So, but for us, you know, that was 2 days that we were happy with. We thought we'd seen everything, but if you want to, you can go walking off in all different directions and you'll see kind of little versions of the monastery and the treasury, you know, what you think of Petra. You can see little versions of them carved into rocks all over the place. They're just not as well maintained. But you could really explore for 3 days, maybe more if you wanted to. It's quite an impressive sight.
It really is. And it was one that took my breath away. I think out of all of the bucket list items, you might hype it up and you think, oh, am I going to really love it when I get there? Like for me, for example, in Egypt, when we got to the pyramids, I was like, oh yeah, like they look cool. But when I arrived in Petra, I was blown away. And because it's such a nice walk when you arrive there as well, because the caves kind of hide it a little bit and then you see the edge of it. And then the more you walk, it just opens up and you're like, wow, this place is stunning.
Yeah, it was special. So another real highlight. And while it's in my head, I've got a great tip for you guys, because I've thought about paying to get into Petra. Before you get to Jordan, buy the Jordan Pass. You can go online and do it. And what it is, for like one ticket, one price, that's your visa for the country. It's also your entry into Petra, and you can choose how many times you want to enter. And it also gets you in to around 40 other attractions around the country. And it's around, I think it was 75 Jordanian dinar, around £75. But you get all that included in it. And you save a hell of a lot of money, because I think just Petra on its own, you'd be paying at least £50 to get into. So you get your visa and entrance to other places as well. So go online and get the Jordan Pass.
Yeah, we worked out we saved 100 Great British pounds each from buying that pass.
Come on, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and it's just a barcode on your phone, so they'll be able to scan you in as you go through. And in case you're wondering as well, visa for foreigners into the country is about 40 Great British pounds. So you've already made your money back if you get your visa into the country, which you have to do, and then Petra as well. So yeah, you've already made your money back.
Go Jordan Pass. So that was really good. So moving on from Petra, while we were staying with Injed and Arkan, they very kindly invited us round for dinner, like for a traditional meal, around their mum's house, which was great. And the traditional food is called mansaf.
Yeah, and we felt very privileged because he said that we were the second group or second group of people that he'd invited over. So we felt very privileged. Thank you very much, Injad and Arkan.
So if you guys are wondering what the hell is Mansaf, well, Injad is back, bless him, to explain what it is.
Well, Mansaf is like that. You can describe it like this: rice, a white rice with yogurt. That yogurt, it's, you can say that it's a heavy yogurt and it's smoky in some way. And also, we bought on it a chicken or maybe meat. It depends. And we bought peanuts on it. And well, easy like that with a meat.
Yeah, and coriander sprinkled over the top. Yes. And I like how you eat together. It's on one big plate in the middle, and everyone kind of helps themselves. That's right,
yes,
isn't
exactly.
It?
We don't eat in individual or separately. We're eating all of us in the same plate. It's a big one, and we usually, as a Jordanian, eating or prefer to eat in our hands.
And what I think is interesting, can you tell us traditionally, as the host, what you do?
Yes. Well, what does the host should do? That he just put the meal for the guests and he leave, and he keeps serving them while they eat until they finish. Usually guests invite the host to eat with them, but the host just reject that, and he said, no, it's impossible to eat with you, it's your meal.
As the host, does the host enjoy that? Like, as long as the guests are happy, then the host is happy. Is that right?
Of course, of course, that's completely true. While the guests happy, must they get happy, must the host become like more happier.
So that's what Mansaf is. And it's really strange because when you look at it, it looks like a very dairy meal because it's got a white sauce. So when I first tried it, that's what I was expecting. But Injad was right there. It's got a very smoky taste to it. And also with the nuts as well. It was so strange. It didn't taste anything like it looked.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And rice, chicken and peanuts worked really well together. Mm. And that yogurt sauce was delicious, wasn't it?
It was really good. And yeah, we feel very privileged that we were invited over.
Yeah, so how good was that? So thank you, Injad. We're actually going to hear a little bit from him again in just a sec, which will be a treat for everyone. But what a great time we had with Injad and Arkan. You know, especially we're in Petra, one of the most popular tourist destinations in the world. We thought, I bet we won't find a couch surfer, but let's give it a go. Amy, you found him.
I did.
You've done very well. And what a good time we had with him and his brother Arkan. And we spent like 2 nights in the tent with them, all just chatting, eating food. Injad bought us food one night.
Smoking shisha.
And then we were like putting each other's music on. And there's one night we had a bit of a party, but it's funny because it was like dark in there. We had some flashing lights. It was like a disco. We had music going. We were all showing off our own dance moves.
From our cultures.
And it was funny because me and Amy were, you know, because it is our culture in England, we don't get up and dance unless you've had a drink. But me and Amy, we're having this big rave and we're looking at each other and we're thinking like, everyone in this room is sober. But it was so strange. But we had a great time with them. There's also some other couch surfers as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, so we had Maria and Laura couch surfing with us. And it was actually their first couch surfing experience, which is really special to have such a good host and good group of people for their first time. So I'm really glad that they experienced that for their first time. And yeah, no, it was such a nice group and everybody got on really well. And yeah, like you said, we were sharing dance moves from our culture and we was learning Jordanian dancing and stuff, and this is all in that video that I've made as well. It's very funny.
It is so funny. So Injad and Arkan, thanks so much for having us. You guys were legends. So we'll leave Injad now and we're moving on to the next part of our trip, but before we do, this is a treat for everyone. You can hear Injad and his friend Shuja singing.
How good does that sound?
Sounds proper, like authentic, like Arabic singing. It's really nice. It sounds really good.
Yeah, and actually I just remembered that when we went over to Injad and Arkan's house for Mansaf, we ended up having such a brilliant conversation. It's actually one of the best conversations of this trip, actually, where we're talking about our culture, their culture, how our governments work and what's life like for women, but all these different really strong subjects. And it was just, we learned so much, and they were asking us questions about like in London with our beef eaters And it was just such a nice conversation, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's funny because, and what I love about these conversations is, you know, me and Amy will be saying stuff which is just normal, everyday stuff to us, and they'll be surprised. Like, what? Oh my God, like you do things that way, and we do things this way. And it really is just fantastic to learn about different cultures because I've said it before, but you'll learn things that you think, ah, that's better that way, or the way we do it is better. But you have to learn about these cultures rather than just hear about countries on the news, speak to the people, and it's really fascinating. So yeah, I really enjoyed spending time with those guys.
Yeah, me too. Now, Nick, it's time for our game, or your game, should I say, because we have come up with a fantastic name once again.
It's all about the name.
If we can blow our own trumpet there. But yeah, it's not so much a travel game, but we're going to learn a lot about Nick in this, because this is
a man. I feel like a woman.
Let's go, girl. So, Nick, we are going to test you and see if you have a male or female brain.
This is going to be interesting. Okay, I'm ready.
So this is an online test that I found, which is called How Male/Female is Your Brain? And the first question is, Nick, what was the last thing that made you cry? I've got some options for you here. A death, cute animal videos, a job loss, weight gain, or I don't cry. Well, that one's not true, so...
Yeah, is the option Disney movie on there?
Yeah, that would definitely be your option, wouldn't it?
Out of them options, the truth is, don't mean to get dark, but a death, I guess, last year, went to my granddad's funeral.
Yeah, so, I guess that is the correct one,
but
yeah.
That's true, so a death.
Okay, what's your criteria when shopping for jeans? That they look normal, how my butt looks, that I can get it over with quickly, or how they look with my shoes?
It's true, when I shop, just get it over quickly. These, so far, I think these are real men answers, because I am a man.
You're the manliest man I know.
But that's true, shopping, I'm in and out, quick.
Quick like a cat. It bodes well for me that speed impresses you.
I am in and out very quickly.
Which of the following small dogs can you imagine yourself having? A Pomeranian, a Jack Russell, a Beagle, or a Maltese?
Okay, so you're showing me some pictures because I wouldn't know otherwise. And the only one I think looks like a good dog out of them, I've heard Jack Russell's a hard work. I'm going to go Beagle. I think they look quite cool.
Oh, Beagle's quite a nice dog actually, yeah. Okay, I think this is a very Nick question. What's most appealing when you're sleepy? Curling up with someone, i.e. me, but not be anyone else.
Yep.
Sleep, a sugar-based food, or black coffee?
I've got to go for the first one, snuggling up with you.
Really? I thought you were going to say sleep.
Yeah, but then I would then fall asleep, but I fall asleep easier when you're there. But I definitely wouldn't go for like a sugary treat or a coffee.
No. Okay, so curling up with someone. Okay.
Yep. And watching Chocolat. It's a beautiful movie. I've actually never seen it.
What film is that from?
Son, I Love You Man. Where he said, the best night I ever had was me and Zoe. She had a bottle of wine and watched Chocolat. You mean chocolate.
And he goes, oh my God, I love that movie.
Anyway.
Oh, this quiz has jumped to a very dark subject very quickly.
Okay.
So we've gone from dogs to, do you carry a knife of any kind? A utility knife? Only for protection, no, or yes, a broadsword.
No, I don't have a knife.
I'm very glad you said that. Oh, okay, this is an interesting one. You just went through a nasty breakup. How do you get through it? I start looking for another relationship.
Rebound.
I talk it through with my friends and family. I start a meaningful relationship with my couch and Netflix. Or the quickest way to get over someone is to get under someone else.
Okay, that's the rebound. So what? The options are relationship. Okay, so this is all about me. This sounds really bad, but, well, not in the last 10 years. I haven't really had a breakup which is affecting me that badly that I've had to get over. I don't think I've ever had one like that.
Yeah, but put yourself in the situation. Imagine right now I'm like, Nick, I hate you. I hate you.
I hate you.
I don't want to be with you anymore. This podcast is utter crap and I don't ever want to talk to you again. What would you do?
So, I don't know. I'm not feeling strongly about all four of those ones because I guess the one a lot of people, especially blokes, would say is the fourth one, which is just like the best way to get over someone is to get under someone way. But I think what I honestly do is if we broke up, I'd probably just travel on my own for a bit and just get on with things.
Can't make up answers.
Have space to myself. I'm saying what I would do. I don't think any of them is...
I think you would just like lay on the couch and watch Netflix.
I was just going to say, out of them four, yeah, I'd start a meaningful relationship with my couch and Netflix. I'd just chill. Yeah, I would just chill out.
There we go. You better not be sleeping with other people, Nick. If you do, I'm coming after you.
I'll get you.
Okay, this is another Nick question. You're introduced to 10 new people at a party. How many names do you remember?
I can answer that. Zero. Whenever someone tells me their name, I don't even try to listen. It literally goes in one ear and out the other. Well, not literally, but, you know, I can... yeah, none.
Oh, okay. When you're in a bar, how do you get someone's attention? It's about eye contact and body position. Smile. Make the terrifying approach and start talking.
Smile.
What kind of smile would it be out of interest? So buy your face now some creepy one that everyone would run away from. How many times a year would you say you get seriously moody? More than 12, 8 to 12, 4 to 8 or 1 to 4, I never get moody.
1 to 4.
Yeah, I don't know, it's either that or I never get moody.
Yeah, I can still get moody. I was moody the other day because I was hungry.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And you like... I don't know, let's not go into it now. I was telling you all day I was hungry, but you weren't listening. But if you were hungry, we'd go straight to a restaurant. Anyway, 1 to 4.
I had stuff to do, okay? This isn't a question, it's just one word. Mistakes, ... were made, are best avoided, are a part of life. Mistakes? What are those?
No, everyone can make a mistake. Part of life.
Very grown up of you, Nick. Well
we
done.
We are not perfect, and that is... what makes us human.
You're perfect to me.
Your imperfections are perfect to me.
Okay, you're having the perfect meal. What's on your plate? Something fresh and seasonal, something sweet, something bleeding. I'd have to see my options first.
Not very good choices then. All right, I don't want to make it purposely too manly. Let's go for something fresh and seasonal.
Okay, last question. Where would you most like to see your name? On the cover of a book, after president, on the back of a professional sports jersey, on the cover of a magazine, or in a history book?
In a history book. I'm going down in history as the goddamn greatest podcaster there ever was.
Really? I'm really surprised you said that.
Yeah, well... I like football, but I've never particularly wanted to be a sports person. Let's go for that. I think it's better to go down in history.
Okay, I have your result in front of me, Nick.
What percentage man am I?
What do you think? Do you think you're more manly or more female?
I think by some of them questions and the answers I gave, I think it's going to be like 60% man, 40% woman.
You're pretty much bang on the money.
Yeah.
You're 67% male and 33% female.
Okay, interesting. We all have a feminine side, don't we? Well, obviously you do because you're a female.
Yeah.
But we all have a bit of both, don't we? I reckon if you took that test, I think it'd be the same result.
It probably would. It says you have a primarily male mind, and while it comes with strengths, it also comes with deficits. Concentrate on empathy and not buying ugly shoes. That's very weird advice.
Wow, this website knows me so well.
So there we go. That's Aman. I feel like a woman. Now that the game's finished, we are going to finish the rest of the show. So we're going to be talking about the Wadi Rum Desert and the Jeep tour that we did there. And we're also going to talk about Aman, the capital city, where we went to the Citadel and went to a great hummus place that we'll tell you about. And we'll mark it out of 10 like we always do at the end. So, Wadi Rum Desert. Nick, go.
So we'd heard a fair bit about this place from listeners saying, oh, in Jordan, you must go Wadi Rum. And I had heard of it before, but I wasn't really too sure what it was. Not like Petra. We all know we've heard about Petra. But this place took me by surprise. And I'm so glad we went. So, yeah, we got a private car from Wadi Musa, or Petra, to the Wadi Rum Desert. And we stayed at a place called the Martian Camp. This place, the whole desert, it's amazing. It's like landscape I've never seen before. It looked like the surface of Mars. And in fact, that is exactly where they filmed the Matt Damon film, The Martian. This landscape was incredible, wasn't it, Amy? What did you think?
Yeah, I really loved it. And like you said, it really looked like The Martian, the film. And a few times, like on our stories and things, you were saying that you'd never really heard silence before going there.
Oh, man. Yeah, I can't describe it because now if we were silent, let's just do an experiment. If we're silent for 2 seconds, even okay. You listening right now in your car, wherever you are, even if you're at home, 2 seconds, and I guarantee we can all hear something. Okay, ready? I could hear a dog in the distance.
Yeah, a dog car. And the humming of the car.
So what I mean, in our lives, there is always noise. But I've never experienced that sort of silence before. It was amazing, wasn't it?
It was really strange because, yeah, it's like someone's put you in a bubble. It felt really weird, actually, but really nice. And like an awesome place to go do like yoga or meditation or something. I'm sure one of the camps has done that. Actually, I did some yoga in our camp tent, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Perfect place for it. Just somewhere to go relax. If we actually had a podcast episode ready to record, the acoustics there would have been perfect to record a podcast.
Yeah.
No background noise. If you want to go write a book or you need some inspiration, go there. All the sand is like red and you've got these big mountains. I loved it. It was incredible. And we actually, through speaking to locals, like people like Injad, and actually I think it was our driver, Mo, who you heard from earlier, he recommended the Martian camp to us. So we found if you speak to people, you'll get recommendations on where to stay, or this place we stayed, the Martian camp, you can just find it on booking.com and they meet you by the entrance of the national park and they take care of you from there, don't they?
Yeah, and you've just reminded me about a massive part of Jordanian culture, which is called Wazda.
Yeah.
Now, this is like a whole system where everybody uses who they know. So, for example, we knew Mo because he was our tour guide and driving us to Petra. And we explained that we wanted to go to the Wadi Rum Desert. And he was like, I know someone who's done a camp there. I went there myself. It was really good. I'd recommend it. Here's the number. And they always pass people on. If you ask anything of anyone, they'll go, don't worry, I have a friend that does that. And they'll ring their friend and then they'll sort it out for you. They don't really use the internet how we do. And they find it really strange that if I need to know something like the train times, for example, the first thing I would do is ask Google. But yep. In their culture, they go, oh, my mate works at the train station. I'll give him a call. And they ring them and then that's how they get their answer. But it's so cool because it just makes the whole world go round. But when we were talking to our friends there, like couch surfing hosts and etc., they were saying, I'm not actually sure if it is that good, because if you think about it, the best person isn't always getting the job or the work or whatever. So say somebody's trying to get into university and then their uncle, for example, knows the guy who runs the university, but he might not have the grades, but he still gets in over someone who does have the grades. So, you know, there's pros and cons to it, but that's how Jordan kind of circulates, and it's called Wazda.
Yeah, and I like the socialness of it. It gets people talking because, yeah, like you said, if someone asks me a question, I just Google it. And I don't talk to my friends. If I rung my friend and didn't text them, they'd be thinking, are you okay? What's wrong? Like, why are you calling? Is it an emergency?
Yeah, it's really strange. And this came out of that really good conversation I told you about that we had with our couchsurfing host, like the best conversation of the trip, really. And they just thought it was so bizarre that our first thing would be to ask a computer. And actually, I kind of see where they're coming from.
I totally agree. And it's only when you have these conversations with people, you realise how strange your own culture is.
And we actually use Wazda ourselves. So Shuja, who you heard singing earlier with Injad, he works a part of the tourist industry and he is a driver as well. So we asked him to take us to the airport when we finished our trip in Amman. And so we texted him and used Wazda and he picked us up and it was great. But he's very cool as well, because I just need to tell people this. When we travel, we don't just hang out with any old someone. We were hanging out with someone who was like a descendant of the royal family from Saudi Arabia.
Say what?
So yeah, this Shuja guy who took us to the airport, he's Saudi Arabian, but he lives in Jordan. And yeah, he's got like a special card that gets him like access to stuff. And like, he's a big deal.
People know him. But what a nice, friendly, like, smiley guy.
Yeah, and that's how I describe him. He's very smiley.
Yeah, and perfect. So we knew someone because he lived in Amman, and we're thinking, we're in Amman, we need to get to the airport tomorrow morning. Do we trust the local taxi guys? I mean, they were fine so far. But we thought, tell you what, let's text someone that we know. And he took us to the airport. What a nice guy. So Shuja, you are a legend.
And we miss you all.
But anyway, now it's time for us all to learn a bit more about the Wadi Rum Desert and the local Bedouin culture.
My name Ahmed Sabah Saidin. I mean, also funny story with my name actually, because Ahmed, it means thank God, and my father name Sabah, it means morning, mm-hmm. and my last family it's called Saidin, that means happy. And okay. If you explain it like, thank God for happy morning.
That was Ahmed, who owns the Martian camp. We asked, what exactly is Wadi Rum?
For me, actually, Wadi Rum, it's everything. Like my kingdom, you know, like my life. But originally, like Wadi Rum, it's 120 kilo square of desert between Jordan and the Saudi Arabia border. Wadi Rum, it's kind of different style of desert because you can see huge mountain, sand dunes, and now it's natural park, like, I mean, famous in the world, actually. A lot of people from all the world come to visit. People came here for two reasons: enjoy the desert as well as, you know, silent and get away from the busy life city and stuff like this. And in the same time, to see the Bedouin culture, the people who's living in the desert. We call them Bedouin, that's us. And the, you know, like when you, the meaning of Bedouin, that's kind of nomad.
So when tourists come to your camp, what can you offer them?
To stay here, you have like a Bedouin tent, and we serve for people food, Bedouin food, cooked by our hand. And also in the extra thing, we do like activity that's like you can try camel riding, they can drive around with the car and see, show them all the desert and see all the site of the beautiful area.
So you were saying that Bedouin people are nomads, but are they just nomads from Jordan, or do Bedouin people spread across other countries as well?
Bedouin culture, for example, our life, it's here before they call it Jordan. Mm. Mm-hmm. But before that, it was under the Ottoman controlling. After that, the Jordan start and come a country as like a private country with a border and stuff like this. But the Bedouin who's like our tribe, they live here before. And actually, like, you know, Bedouin, they have like a trip, and all the Bedouin come like originally from Saudi Arabia, but that's, you talk about 500 or something years ago, and the moving from there, because, you know, as you know, Saudi Arabia, it's not like a green country as, for example, Jordan, Palestine, or somehow north of Africa. And the Bedouin run away from the kind of dry area from the desert there to find, that's actually the reason why the Bedouin moving, because sometimes people, like, they know Bedouin move, but they didn't know why.
Yeah.
You know, the Bedouin moving because find the good spot for feed their animals. Mm. And when they feed their animals, that's back to them to have, like, good milk and cheese or meat or stuff like this. I think it's 500 years old ago. They're traveling from Saudi Arabia. They do a two trip and moving from Saudi Arabia through Jordan, Palestine, Sinai, all the way down to Tunisia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
To Tunisia.
And that's why you find the Bedouin everywhere. That's how the Bedouin start. But all of them, like, as a background, it's belong, you will find, like, because, you know, we work as a tribe. And each tribe, it's passing more than 10,000, 30,000 person. And people live because, you know, in that time, between there is no rules in the desert. If you're strong, that's you, you're still alive. That's why people, they have, like, for example, the family, they have a lot of children. Mm. I mean, the small family in desert, in Bedouin, I mean, you talk about 13, 15 kids. Yeah.
Well,
wow.
And actually, that's the reason, mostly reason for Bedouin, who's married, like, for example, other wife, like next two wife, three wife.
Okay.
Because they need more children to make as a group, as army, to save the tribe and save the his goat and his animals, you know? Mm. Because if you're weak, you lose in the desert. You're not alive anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But now, I mean, we live in safe country, and this culture, it's not anymore, especially, like, I mean, the weak, the strong eat the weak, you know, like there is rules and there is government. And even the way for the married, it's get different. Like people now start marry just one and have less kids, you know.
So how many brothers and sisters do you have?
For me, 15.
Yeah, 15. Wow.
But I'm lucky because we have one mom.
Wow. Yeah. So are you the oldest or the youngest?
I'm in the middle.
In the middle. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Something you said earlier, you said just a minute ago about, you know, you live in a safe country. We're in the Middle East. People out there, you know, they want to know the answer to this question. Is Jordan a safe country?
I think this answer, you should answer it for me. Because
I know the answer.
Yeah, because, you know, like Jordan, it's really safe. Even we see, I mean, you saw some girls traveling alone. You know, some people, a few days ago, they do hitchhike. It's really easy country and safe, completely safe. The last thing you think about it, to be worried about your life.
Thanks very much for that, Ahmed. 15 children by one mum.
What a woman.
I know.
Wow.
I can't even imagine having one child, let alone 15. That's amazing. These women are just so strong and... Yeah, I don't know how they cope.
It was very interesting learning about Bedouin culture there. And we had a very nice stay at the Martian camp. Yeah, they fed us very well. Really good food, wasn't it?
Food was really good. And we had mansaf there as well.
Oh, we did, yeah. And we were, you know, staying in a comfortable tent with a proper bed, proper showers as well. And you get to do day activities. So we really would recommend that. And Wadi Rum was just... It was brilliant. I loved it.
I just remembered an extra feature that our camp had. We had a gym.
Oh, yeah. There was like weights outside, wasn't there? And a proper bench where you can bench press and stuff. Yeah, they got everything.
But yeah, it was really, really comfortable, guys. Like so many times, especially as women, I think we worry a little bit about the conditions that we're going to be sleeping in. But honestly, you have nothing to worry about in the Wadi Rum Desert. The showers were... better than some of the showers we were staying in cities. Like, it was a marble bathroom. It was beautiful. And they really do look after you. They want you to have a good time. And if that's not enough, there's also even more luxurious hotels there as well. Even though we'd recommend you stay at somewhere like the Martian camp because you get more of an authentic experience. But there's a bubble hotel there that we drove past on our Jeep tour. And then also on the other side of that, so that's the really luxurious side. But if you want to go even more authentic, I know that you can stay with Bedouin families that live like Bedouin people still. So, you know, there's no showers, luxury showers and things like that. So yeah, you can have a range of different experiences there. And we would really recommend I'd happily go back and stay with do the more extreme one where you're staying with a Bedouin family.
Yeah, would you? That's interesting.
Yeah, I really would. I think it was really good. And while we were there, we did their Jeep tour. And you can choose it by hours. So you can choose a two-hour one or a three-hour one. We went with 3 hours. And we were joined by three Italian guys who were the most Italian guys like we've ever met.
Yeah, they're in our video, aren't they? We've got that. They say like, ciao, my name is Giorgio.
Giorgio and Amarni.
Amarni.
So we were joined by them. They were really cool. Really fun to hang out with. And yeah, so we went on this Jeep tour, 3 hours. They kind of raced the Jeep up and down the sand dunes.
So much fun.
Yeah, which was really fun. And then they took us to this rock formation where you can walk across the rock and underneath it there's no rock. I don't really know how to explain
it. It's like
it.
A natural bridge, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. And you walk along it and have your picture taken. That's really cool. And yeah, I'd really, really recommend it, guys. It was one of the best days we've had on this trip. It was amazing.
And also on the Jeep tour, you can stop off at other little camps and you stop and drink tea. Just loved it. Mate, I was all about it. So I had a very, very good time in Wadi Rum. So leaving Wadi Rum, that was then when we crossed into Israel. We crossed the border from a city in Jordan called Aqaba. Now, we went into Israel and up Israel, which we'll talk about on the next episode, Israel and Palestine. Then we came back into Jordan, like Amy said earlier, and we actually got a chance now to explore Amman. We saw the Citadel. It's like some ancient Roman ruins. And we went to a proper good restaurant, which we'll talk about in a second. But apart from that, it didn't really seem like there's much else to do. I'd say a day, max two in Amman. it didn't really seem like there was anything too special about it. You think that's fair?
Yeah, and we kept saying that we were on an accidental Roman tour, really, because everywhere we went on this trip so far, you know, Cyprus, Greece, Jordan, there's all got Roman ruins. So definitely by that point, we were a bit like, oh, okay, cool, it's another pillar, whatever.
Yeah, I'm glad we're now in South America. No Roman ruins here. They didn't make it this far, did they?
So yeah, while you're there, you know, go. It was also included in our Jordan pass, so we didn't have to pay to get in.
Yes.
And also talking about the Wadi Rum Desert, because it's a national park, you pay around 5 Jordanian dinar to get in. But again, that was included in our Jordanian pass. So that was another £5 that we saved.
So let's talk about this restaurant we went to.
Oh, yeah. So this restaurant's called Hashem, and we found it on a blog, quite a few blogs actually, because people kind of rave about it. It's very... Well, I'd say it's very local and it's just got good food, you know. It's just one of those places. It's not about appearances, it's about the food. Yep. They've got tons of tables. It looks like a small restaurant, and then the more you walk in, more rooms open up. And it was hard to find a table, and there was a good 100 tables there.
Yeah, and what I liked was it was pretty much half full of tourists and half full of locals. So obviously tourists know about it. Obviously, we found it on a blog, like you just said. But locals still go there because it's proper good food. And the waiter, he could tell we were foreigners. So rather than try and talk in different languages, he just said, like, sit there, basically, I'll get you the full spread. And he brought out hummus and all these different dips,
baba ganoush,
breads and falafels
and chips.
Yeah, chips. So it was very good service. He brought us exactly what we wanted. We had loads of food, too much food. We took some home for later, and we paid, it was about £7 each, I remember.
Was it? So I thought it was £7 together.
No, yes, it was £7 each. So, you know, not the cheapest meal ever, but actually to get a full meal, it was proper good. And we took some home. I think that's pretty decent.
Yeah, it was really good. We'd definitely recommend it. So that restaurant was called Hashem. That's Hashem. And it's kind of in the centre. I think we got a taxi there for like £2. And we were driving for quite a while. Taxis are quite cheap there. Make sure they put the meter on, as always.
Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned that. Because as long as they put the meter on, actually getting around Amman was very cheap in taxis. Because, again, public transport just doesn't seem to exist. So I think taxi is the best way to get around. But yeah, like you said, put that meter on.
Now, that was our Jordan trip. So, Nick, we need to mark it out of 10.
Okay, I haven't thought about this, actually. I normally think about it before we record, but I'm going to think about it right now. What do you think? Have you got your score?
Yes, so my score, I would say, is... I'm going to give it a strong 7.2.
What is with the points?
Well, because there's lots of countries, Nick. I can't just give them all out of 10.
Okay.
But yes, definitely a strong 7. I would go back because we could have explored the north. Because we went over to Israel, we didn't get full time in Jordan, but we wanted to explore both. And Palestine, sorry. And so, yeah, I'm going to give it a strong 7.2. I want to go to the north because I know it's a lot greener up there and you can do some hikes and things like that. I reckon it's beautiful. But I really love the place. I especially love the people. Their hospitality is unbelievable. They've got really good food. Their shawarma is insane.
Yeah.
Out of all the shawarma in the Middle East countries, that's my favourite one because they put it in a wrap and then they put it on a hot iron and like flatten it and they give you really good white sauce and chips. It's really, really good. I spoke more about it in our food episode, so you can hear more about it there. But yeah, I really, really love the country. And when we was talking to Ahmad in the Wadi Rum Desert, he was saying that a lot of people are a little bit worried of Jordan, a bit cautious because they think it's quite dangerous, which I was really surprised at because I haven't heard anything about Jordan in terms of safety. Maybe I'm just missing something big, I'm not sure, but I felt completely and utterly safe, especially as a woman. I mean, not as comfortable as in my own country because, you know, that's their culture. But I did feel safe and I would recommend anyone to go. I think it's an absolutely fantastic country.
Good roundup. I think the safety security thing just comes from the fact that it's in the Middle East and countries around it are in conflict. But Jordan itself is safe. So I would echo that. I'm going to go for an 8 out of 10. In terms of like the attractions like Petra, Dead Sea and Wadi Rum, in terms of just attractions for what travellers want, it gets a 10 out of 10. Like those attractions are amazing.
That's so true.
But then what brings it down to an 8 is I feel like places away from those attractions, maybe like Amman, I wasn't really that keen on. So then I kind of averages out at a strong 8 out of 10, which is bloody good.
I'm going to bump mine up to a 7.6.
That means nothing.
From what you just said.
How did you get to 0.2? 7.2. But yeah, I think it's got what travellers want. If you want adventure, go for it. And it all comes in quite a small package. It's quite a small country and a very interesting culture.
If you can hear, as we're recording here, I think there's like a helicopter going up over above us, which echoes what I said at the start, really, that there's some political things going on here. We're thinking it might be like an army helicopter.
Yeah, it's kicking off.
I think it's gone now.
Yeah, it's gone now. Great. So that's our roundup of Jordan. So high scores all around.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming up next on the podcast, we're going to have a mini episode, but our next main episode will be about Israel and Palestine. It's a really interesting country because of their culture, their food, but also how it's split in two, and they've got two different languages and lots of different cultures. And it's really, really fascinating country. So that will be our next main episode.
Yeah, it's a fascinating place, but very complicated place, very controversial. I feel like whatever we do, we're going to get some stick from people, but all we can do is tell you our experience there. So look forward to that one.
See you next time. Shukran, Habibi.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with the show. You can email us at whatthefoepodcast@gmail.com. We are also on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we are also on Patreon. For more information on all those things, you can go to our website at www.whatthefoetravelpodcast.com.